This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us on our Main Street across North Dakota via radio this time of day. Today we're going to start our show talking about hunger in North Dakota. It's a problem. It's a problem in the country, and it's a particular problem in parts of North Dakota. And we're going to talk about this with members of the Hunger Free North Dakota Coalition. They join us from our studio in Bismarck. Let's say hello to Lori Sapo. She is the Rural Development Director for the North Dakota Association of Rural Electric Co-ops. Thank you for being with us, Lori.
Thank you for having me.
And Karen Ahrens is with you. She's a health and nutrition consultant with Ahrens Consulting, but the important thing is you're both involved in the coalition. Karen, thank you for being with us.
Good day, and thank you for having us.
Who belongs to the Hunger Free North Dakota Coalition?
Well, this is Karen. I'm the coordinator for the coalition, so I'll jump in here and tell you about our diverse network of members of people who get food to people in North Dakota. That's all the way from the people who grow our food to the people who help get food to seniors, to children in schools, to people who visit food pantries and soup kitchens, and many places in between.
So, Lori, what is the interest of the rural electric co-ops in this effort?
Well, we are interested in food access across rural North Dakota, and we've been connected with Karen because their concerns are the same. In essence, we're just very concerned about the health and welfare of people in North Dakota.
Your constituents are out there where we're talking about, I take it.
Yes.
How is this coalition funded, Karen?
Well, we are a network, and the North Dakota Department of Health has supported the time for a coordinator ever since the coalition began 10 years ago. And so with that small amount of funding available each year, we help bring the members together, usually on a monthly basis, to learn from each other what's new, find ways that we can work better together, and try to reduce any duplication of effort that might happen.
Well, we're not officially part of the coalition, but Prairie Public and Main Street in particular will be focusing on some of these issues throughout the year, going up to your summit in September. And we'll archive these discussions at podcasts as well so that people can keep track of them. Karen, what are the priorities currently being pursued to achieve the goal of a hunger-free North Dakota?
Well, it's people with the powerful vision of a hunger-free North Dakota. We are a statewide network open to all. And I think our priorities over the last 2 years are focusing on the increasing connections between lack of a secure food source and the health of people. And the people's health is related to their ability to be productive at work, productive at school, for children to learn to their best ability, and for us all to have a strong and healthy state.
Well, we're speaking, of course, from two of the state's biggest cities, Fargo and Bismarck, where there's no lack of access to supermarkets, big grocery stores. But we're going to focus today on the Rural Grocer Initiative, because apparently rural groceries across the state have been diminishing in number. They're down like 15% in the last 5 years. And that, of course, affects people's access to fresh food and that kind of thing, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, about 5 years ago, we started getting phone calls from rural grocery stores just saying, is there any grant money available? We're short operating costs. And I'm a rural development professional. That's not a normal request for help. And, you know, the first grocery store we heard that from, we were a little bit concerned about them. They did end up closing their doors. But we received quite a few phone calls that year asking for help. And so we started thinking something was shifting in that industry or something had changed. A little bit worried that it was population decline and that was the sole reason that they were closing. But we did a little bit of internet research and we started learning that we weren't the only state that was experiencing this, that it was something that was happening across all the rural areas in North Dakota. So we started connecting with our grocery stores to see, you know, what their challenges were and was this a decline that we could verify. And like so many things that decline is silent, and especially in rural areas, you're not realizing what's happening around you when you're operating in your own community and your own main street. And until somebody starts connecting those dots and counting the numbers, you really can't see what's happening. So that was when we realized we had 137 stores 5 years ago, and now we're down to 104.
Well, I can recall when I was a kid, there were actually neighborhood grocery stores, even in large cities, that was the case. Then the supermarkets came, and that changed the sort of the food distribution business in urban areas. But nowadays, I kind of struggle with what is the definition of a grocery store, because you have convenience stores that are gas stations all over the state of North Dakota. How does, Karen, the Hunger Free North Dakota Coalition define a grocery store?
Well, let's see. We've discussed that, and I think we've settled upon a place where you can find access to food that is fresh, a place where you can find vegetables and fruits and things that you take home and cook. And that includes access to dairy products, fresh meat as well. So we have a growing number, or at least a stable number, of places where you can find food that's prepared and processed, and it's fairly cheap and it's easy to come by. But also, when we think of the connections between health and access to food, it's really important that people have access to places where you can get fresh food that you can prepare yourself and control what goes in it.
Well, when we think of fresh food, and, you know, we're also concerned about prices, and I'm looking at my experience driving across North Dakota, stopping perhaps at a convenience store because I can get gasoline there. I go inside and I see, well, they've got celery. They've got, meat wrapped and frozen and that kind of thing. Has the competition, the kind of the business of meeting the needs of people in a particular part of the state changed, and has that altered whether a standalone grocery store is a viable business, and maybe a co-op gas station and grocery store is the solution?
Yes, price is a very large factor in food access. It's one of the reasons people drive larger distances to get their food is because they are looking for a better price. And that distribution of food, as far as we can tell, is based primarily on volumes purchased. So if you're a smaller grocery store and you're purchasing a smaller volume, your prices are higher. Sometimes they're higher to the point where your wholesale cost is the same as the retail price in a more urban center.
Wow.
You know, our food distributors don't necessarily have defined service territories. There's still competition for certain customers within our rural areas, and our rural areas, the volume's gotten so small that it feels like it's time to start streamlining the movement of that food.
And when we think about food security, we want to make sure that people who don't have access to a vehicle, who may not drive during the winter, who may not drive at night, don't have the means to drive to a larger urban center to purchase their food, also have the access to food nearby where they live.
And, of course, we live in a farm and ranch state where people are probably used to driving a fair amount just to get whatever they need of any sort. But I did go up to your website, hungerfreend.org, and there's a fair amount of information up there. And I was struck by the kind of volume of business that a grocery store needs to conduct in order to be viable. And, you know, there are lots of parts of the state where you'd wonder if that kind of business environment exists.
That was one more aha moment that we had. An average U.S. grocery store has weekly sales of around $320,000 per week.
That's a bunch.
It is. And our average rural grocery stores, the midpoint is right around $20,000 per week. Mm. And so when you try to figure out what the net profit margins are for that really small grocery store versus a more urban store, it's no wonder that we have trouble keeping our stores open.
Is there a part of the state or parts of the state that are in particularly tough situations because of this phenomenon, this changing marketplace, this business model that isn't quite working?
When we started mapping the stores and identifying the food desert areas, it does look like the central, kind of eastern central part of the state is the part that's losing more of its grocery stores or has less access to food at this point. I would say also the southwestern part as well.
And, of course, specific populations you've mentioned, you know, older people who may not want to be driving. How about those areas that are, you know, reservation areas, that kind of thing?
Yes. The reservations have a particularly hard time having access to food. Many times the prices there are higher from the supplier than in other parts of the state as well. So it entices people to drive to purchase their food.
Well, let's get to some potential ideas, if you will, for solutions here. This is Karen Ahrens. She's the coordinator for the Hunger Free North Dakota Coalition, and Lori Sopo. She is the Rural Development Director for the North Dakota Association of Rural Electric Co-ops. What can be done to turn this trend around, to get more groceries out to more people?
We don't have that silver bullet answer quite yet, but we have all of these ideas just swimming around in our heads and things that some of them are actually trying to implement at this time. We do wonder whether we can get groups of grocery stores together to start purchasing on a cooperative basis, and we are trying a pilot project in the northeast corner of the state to try to do something like that. When you think of Dollar General stores, the reason they get products so affordably to their stores across our rural areas is because they are buying collectively at the same price. So we're trying to improve their volume and improve their price. And by doing that, maybe get better variety in those stores as well. We're also trying to get the state involved in this and have them look at the policies that are in place that may impact how entities purchase food, such as schools and, you know, some of the programs that are available through our rural grocery stores. Is there ways to enhance those so that people can buy food more affordably? And we are also looking to form a public-private partnership. So, for example, we've been talking to the U.S. Postal Service and wondering if there's a way to partner with them. They're already driving to all of these rural communities. Is there a way to move food to grocery stores as well? Kind of thinking like Amazon. Amazon partnered with existing distribution systems, and they're able to get their product quite affordably to almost everywhere in the nation.
That's what I thought of. As soon as you said the Postal Service, I thought this might be their business model adapting as well.
Right.
Well, let's talk about this pilot project that you mentioned that's taking place in Cavalier, Nelson, Pembina, Ramsey, Walsh counties, and the Spirit Lake Reservation. There would be a number of stores. Are they receptive to the idea of forming a cooperative arrangement?
So our initial data showed us that 77% of the businesses in that area understand or are interested in collaborating. However, just like human nature, it's hard to change. So when we got to the point where we were saying, okay, we're moving forward, to this point, people got a little gun-shy. So what we've emerged with, it's in Walsh County. There's a group. It's a four-point hub. So we have one store that's interested in serving as a redistribution site and two other grocery stores that would be distributed to from that grocery store. And then we have, interestingly, one community without a grocery store that we're going to test the financial feasibility of whether we can do a grocery locker system.
And what is a grocery locker system? Is that somebody can – you get access to it if you have a code or something like that?
Right. It's climate controlled, so you can deliver frozen, refrigerated, or dried products to there. You order through your local grocery store. It's either a credit card or SNAP transaction. It's paid for at that time. You're assigned a code. You then – the food is delivered to that locker in the other community. The customer can enter their code. And the doors that are holding your grocery items pop open, and you can receive your groceries.
Wow. Shades of the automat from generations ago.
Yes.
Well, how about this involvement of schools? That is intriguing to me because schools, of course, if they have lunch programs and things like that and early school breakfast programs, they're big users of food. So are they? Would they potentially be important partners in this in terms of getting distribution interest?
They are. They used to be really good customers of the local grocery stores, and some of them still are. There's been some changes in the regulations on how groceries are purchased, or food is purchased, excuse me, for the schools. And budgets are tighter as well, so they're looking also for good prices. And because of that, some of them are now purchasing through food service distributors versus the grocery store, so they're getting supplied directly. So we're trying to get some of those purchases to start moving through the grocery store again because, as I mentioned earlier, it's all about volume. The higher volume the grocery store has, the more affordable the prices are for everybody.
So you might be talking about some sort of state policy adjustment here for that.
Maybe just a clarification of the policy that's out there and exploring. So there's also other programs that have started purchasing. For example, senior meal programs where seniors come together and eat at a senior center or have their meals delivered to them in some of our rural towns, encouraging them to shop through their rural grocery store. We have another project where we're encouraging and exploring how people who provide childcare to children can also make some of the especially fresh food purchases through the local grocery store. And so there are many different ways and programs that we're encouraging them to think about instead of just working with others who do the same thing as you, but working with others in your community who also purchase food. And how can we work better together?
There's another complication here, of course, with food distribution, particularly fresh food distribution. When I go to a supermarket and I'm buying a loaf of bread, I'm always checking. I'm going to the bakery area. I'm not going to the one where the bread could last for 2 years if you don't open the bag. I'm going to the fresh bakery area, and I'm looking at when it was baked and when it's, you know, when it's good for. So there are expiration dates on certain kinds of food products. And that would seem to really complicate this.
Well, at the federal level and at the state level, we're working to clarify those codes that are on food packages. Some of them are a matter of best quality rather than expiration.
There's a lot of confusion with that.
Right.
Yes.
There's confusion on that.
Buy or don't
right.
use it after this.
Right. So we're working to clarify that, making sure that people understand that. Some of our rural groceries purchase food in the frozen form and sell it in the frozen form, and that seems to work pretty well, too, to help keep the food fresher longer. So addressing food waste and expiration dates are also ways that we can work on this together.
It would seem to me that this issue is not unique to North Dakota. There's lots of rural U.S. out there, and there are probably lots of ideas that are being explored. Is there kind of a greater coalition that that you work with, too, you know, sort of an idea bank that's existing and growing?
Yes, actually, we are connecting our work to the surrounding states. We have contacts in Minnesota, South Dakota, Montana, Idaho, Kansas. So we're trying to learn together, share together, not reinvent the wheel separately in every single state. But interestingly, the states that are feeling this first and foremost are the states that are the least populated. It's where you can feel the trends first. It's where it becomes feeling a little bit more desperate earlier than other states.
It would seem to me, too, Lori, that as a rural development director, I see newsletters from rural co-ops. You communicate with your customers, and this is a sort of a way to keep them in the loop about these developments, isn't it?
Exactly. And working for the electric and telecommunications cooperatives, we use our magazine quite a lot to make sure people understand this is a project that we're working on, we're interested in, we're concerned about.
Well, you've got your work cut out for you. Part of this, I think, from what I understand from the discussion so far, is that there are habits, behaviors that need to be altered a bit in order to make this work.
Yes, that is a part of it. And, you know, people talk about rural becoming cool again, that people are going to move back to rural areas and live there. And I believe that. I think that'll be true. And North Dakota is a fantastic place for that. You can telecommute quite easily in North Dakota because we have great broadband access in most areas. However, if we can't hold on to some of these basic amenities in our rural communities, people aren't going to be interested in moving there. They're going to look for at least access to food and health care, some of those basics.
Quality of life includes a little diversity at the dinner table.
Yes.
Well, we're going to pursue this, as I mentioned, for a few months now on Main Street with discussions about Hunger-Free North Dakota and the coalition that is supporting it and the various issues. For example, in April, we'll talk about the summer food service program. You know, in the summer when school is out, people, kids, still need to eat healthy meals. So I want to thank you both for being with us today. Karen Ahrens is the coordinator of Hunger-Free North Dakota Coalition, and she also is a health and nutrition consultant with a business called Ahrens Consulting. And Lori Sapo is a rural development director for the North Dakota Association of Rural Electric Co-ops. Lori, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And Karen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you to Prairie Public for this partnership.